originates from the Rene Crown Public Media Center. WTTW shares our gratitude with the Alexandra and John Nichols family for their leadership commitment to trusted news and public affairs programming.
This is the beginning of the most audacious undertaking that man has ever attempted.
It was a hard march.
This will be the greatest and most complex exploration in man's history.
Everybody felt they had a piece of it, and they did.
Friday at 9 on WTTW.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The country turned 250 years old this month. A look at how views on the American dream have changed over time. The stars are out in Chicago for WNBA All-Star Weekend. A look at what to expect as the league shoots for increased viewership.
I think pickleball people love to share this game with other people.
And Chicago Slice sounds like the city's newest pizza restaurant, but it's actually a sports team. Meet the city's professional pickleballers. First off tonight, a federal judge is ordering Chicago's recently retired top cop, Larry Snelling, to answer questions under oath. Snelling will have to sit for a deposition as part of an ACLU lawsuit alleging the Chicago Police Department targeted Black and Latino drivers in a massive campaign of traffic stops. Lawyers for the city had asked Judge Mary Rowland to block Snelling's deposition, arguing that his schedule was too busy and that other CPD officials could provide the same information. Since Snelling retired last week, Rowland ordered him to answer questions for 6 hours and put no limits on what he can be asked, despite pleas from city attorneys. A state ethics panel says it will release a report outlining an investigation into the conduct of former state representative Harry Benton. Benton resigned earlier this month amid allegations of sexual harassment. Benton and his accuser are both given a chance to review the report, suggest redactions, which the Legislative Ethics Commission will consider, and provide a response that will be published with the report. The commission expects to have the report completed by July 31st. Democratic U.S. senators are calling on President Donald Trump to increase access to in vitro fertilization. Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, who conceived her daughters with the help of IVF, is one of the lawmakers pushing the president for help passing the Right to IVF Act.
It will lower costs and it will expand coverage for military families and federal employees. It will help ensure that hopeful parents don't go bankrupt when they're just trying to start a family. So if Trump actually believes he's the father of IVF, or if my Republican colleagues actually support IVF like they say they do when they're on cable news, then this bill is a chance to prove that their claims aren't just lies.
The push comes almost 2 years after Trump promised that IVF would be free for all Americans if he were elected. This Saturday would have been the 85th birthday of Emmett Till, the Chicago boy lynched in Mississippi 71 years ago. Instead, the 25th will honor the then 14-year-old boy who became a civil rights icon by marking Illinois' first ever Emmett Till Day.
Every time I saw his mother, I felt like I had a survivor's guilt. What does she think? I came back and he didn't come back. We never talked about it. And about 2003, I believe it was, just before she died, she said, "I want you and my wife to carry on his legacy."
Till's cousin, Reverend Wheeler Parker, was present today as Governor Pritzker signed the legislation designating the commemorative day. Parker, 16 years old at the time of his cousin's lynching, is the last living witness to Till's kidnapping. The bill signing was held at Roberts Temple Church of God in Christ, where his mother, Mamie Till Mobley, allowed mourners to view the boy's mutilated body at his open casket funeral, thus galvanizing the civil rights movement. A Stanley Cup star is returning to Chicago. The Blackhawks and Patrick Kane have agreed to a $16 million two-year contract. The 37-year-old future Hockey Hall of Famer spent his first 15-plus seasons with the Hawks, helping lead them to 3 championships. The number one overall pick in the 2007 draft has the most NHL points by a player born in the United States. He has more than 50 career goals and nearly 900 assists. He was the league MVP in 2016. And the Blackhawks will be trying to make the playoffs for the first time since 2020. The new NHL season begins September 29th. Up next, a new documentary explores the meaning of the American dream. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
America's 250th anniversary brings up one timeless question. What is the American dream? The team behind a new documentary airing on WTTW traveled all 50 states to pose that very question to 1,000 people. Here's a look at Amerigo, the search for the American dream.
Where's the American dream? I've been looking for it. The dream that promised that hard work would be enough. What happens when hard work simply isn't enough anymore? Over 2 years, I crossed this country, east to west, north to south, and I listened to the voices of hundreds and hundreds of everyday working Americans. Families and farmers, teachers and truck drivers, students and service workers.
And joining us now to talk more about the documentary are husband and wife filmmakers David McCourt, writer, narrator, and co-producer of Amerigo, and Julie McCourt, co-producer of Amerigo. Thanks to you both for joining us. Welcome to Chicago Tonight.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you for being here.
So why did you want to create this documentary? David, I'll start with you.
Well, everybody was celebrating America's 250th birthday, and they seemed to be looking backwards. We wanted to create a film that looked forward and asked ourselves, what do we want America to look like for the next 250 years? And we thought the best way to do that was to ask Americans, what do they want America to look like going forward? So the film isn't our point of view. The point is, the film is America's point of view on what we need going forward.
Julie, same question to you. Why did you want to make this?
You know, it started as a conversation between us. And then that conversation, we realized, really had to be had publicly. So it's unscripted. Nobody was cast. We got very good at just reaching out to strangers. And actually, we got really good at saying, you know, excuse me, we just wondered, what do you think of the American dream? The process was just life-altering because we talked to so many different people. We had the opportunity to really listen to stories from all over the country. And overall, it's a conversation we want to keep going. I mean, people talking to one another about what's on their mind, unmitigated by, you know, a news feed or prompted by a very simple question. What's your hope for the future? Right. Yeah.
So, you know, as Americans, we often think about home ownership, and we heard a lot about the white picket fences in this film.
Yeah.
We often think about home ownership as sort of reflecting achievement of the American dream, because owning a home is apparently the American dream. Why is that, David? How did we get to that?
Well, I think home ownership is really embedded in America from the very beginning. Remember, we had the Homestead Act. We gave a big piece of America to people if they would build a home and contribute to their community. So it's embedded in what it means to be an American. And we've sort of set rules out to say, if you work hard and you contribute to your community, you get to own a home. Some people own a big home, some people own a small home. But if you work hard, you should be able to afford a home in America. And from World War II to the 1970s, the average home in America was 3 times the average income. And that was affordable for everyone at that level. Today, it's 8 times the average income, but it's 16 times a janitor's income. So it's not affordable for half of Americans. And I don't think that's fair, personally. And it's hard to live a dignified life if you know you can never afford to own a tiny piece of America, the country that you love, the country that you're willing to work for, the country that you're willing to fight for, the country you're willing to contribute to your community for and volunteer for and help strangers for, but you can't own a tiny piece of it yourself. And I don't think that's a good policy, personally.
Julie, you know, like you said, you asked participants, like what we literally call man on the street interviews.
Yeah.
You asked them, what is the American dream? Were you surprised by their answers and where the conversations led?
Often. I mean, really diverse, really many answers, 1,000 people, 1,000 different answers, right? They were optimistic. People have an organic patriotism to this country. I was surprised, perhaps, that younger people felt less idealistic about home ownership as a possibility. That was a little upsetting, because in our generation, we all had a path. We understood that we would work hard. Maybe we'd get a small house. Maybe we'd get to sell it and move up. Like, that cycle of, you know, moving up through your economic possibilities seems impossible now. It seems really rough. And to David's point, you know, there are statistics that show this is not as possible as it once was. And we feel that's wrong.
You know, that conversation about home ownership, of course, that segues into conversations about money and greed and economics. Technology and social media. Some people faulting the internet, you know, wholesale for all of our problems. The loneliness epidemic. So you've got, you know, a lot of different themes and conversations to be had here. And it's a complicated subject, though, for a lot of people, the American dream, right? Mm-hmm. Because for some people, they feel they have been denied. What gives you hope, Julie?
You know, and I think we are intrinsically resilient. I think Americans feel that we are, you know, we are Americans. And so the hope there is that we will start talking to one another, that we will build community, that we will start being allies instead of, you know, rejecting divided. One another. I think that's a real hope for the future. And I think there is a groundswell of people who are starting to say, wait a minute. I want back what I felt maybe I had as a child, or maybe what my parents had. And I do think David and I are both very optimistic that the future is very possible, but let's all get on board. You know, let's try very hard to talk to one another. And there we go back to the conversation. Can we start a conversation? We want to get to 1 million voices. We're continuing to film.
Still working on it. There's more to come.
Yeah, we've interviewed 5,000 so far.
We went to 5,000, yeah.
We made the film at 1,000. But we've continued.
So it's turned into an entire project.
It's like an anthropological study of, let's all look at each other, let's talk to each other, let's engage with one another. Listen, the benefit for us is, I mean, it was life-changing to talk to that many people. It really was.
David, you shared some of your own family history in this documentary. Why was that important for you to include, and how do you think your family's history and story are reflected in The American Dream?
Well, it was important for me because my family is a very typical American family. There was nothing special. I mean, we all loved each other, but there was nothing special. My grandfather came here at 16. My grandfather didn't have an education. He worked as a janitor, which means he cleaned buildings and toilets for a living. But he lived a really dignified life. I never remember a birthday or a Christmas when I didn't have a little something for him. He owned his own home. He raised my mother, and then my mother and father raised me. He died debt-free, and he lived a very dignified life, and I was able to stand on his shoulders, and I'm a little bit worried about the 18-year-old version of me, because I wasn't special, and I've got to live the American dream myself, as my father did and my grandfather did. And I just hope that that's possible for the 18-year-old version of me. And that's what I hope this film does, is allow us to talk about that. And if there are some issues, let's solve them together.
Okay, that's a good place to leave it. Congrats on the film and its release. Dave and Julie McCourt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Amerigo airs Monday, July 27th at 9 p.m. on WTTW. Up next, what to expect from WNBA All-Star Weekend. Chicago will be the center of the women's sports world this weekend as the WNBA All-Star Game returns to the city after being held here back in 2022. And those 4 years have made quite a difference. Player salaries, TV ratings, even the number of teams in the league are all up, and excitement seems to be at an all-time high. The All-Star Game will take place Saturday, but events happening all weekend long are set to show what the league has grown into. Joining us with more on what to expect are Maggie Hendricks, reporter at The Nine Sports, Alyssa Hirsch, Chicago Sky beat writer at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Clarissa Flores, founder and CEO of Level Sporting Club and a former college basketball player at Northwestern. Ladies, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So, Maggie, remind us what 2022 All-Star Weekend was like.
It was nowhere near what we're having this weekend. It was only announced to be in Chicago a couple months before the event. It was a lot smaller. The game was at Wintrust as opposed to this year. It's at the United Center. The three-point and skills contest were at McCormick Place, and it basically felt like it was on a sound stage. The public wasn't invited. There were maybe 500-600 people there watching, and Allie Quigley like broke a three-point contest record that time, and it's still like, it looked cool on TV, I think, but it did not look cool when you were there because it literally felt like being on a soundstage.
Okay, what a difference 4 years makes, Clarissa. What is the atmosphere like around the city this year?
I mean, the city is absolutely buzzing. It started on Monday. You know, we did a WNBA All-Star golf tournament the Sky put on. And it's everything. The restaurants are busy. Hotels are busy. Everything about the city, you could feel the energy versus 2022. And I couldn't be more excited for that.
I'm not sure some folks even knew it was happening in 2022, let alone this weekend. Folks are like, this is going on. And there's lots to do with it. Besides the game itself, what else is happening this weekend?
Oh, my goodness. We have so much going on. At Level Sporting Club alone, you know, we have a trivia night tonight. We have a watch party on Saturday with, you know, several brands that we're doing this amazing watch party. We've got an amazing brunch party that we're doing on Sunday. But aside from that, there are events going on. There's about 20 events a day going on. You know, I've already made about 4 or 5 stops before I got here. But there's so much to look forward to. And the game itself at the United Center is definitely going to be the highlight, obviously.
Okay. Alyssa, the Sky, they don't have any All-Stars this year. Instead, fans will have to watch several players that the team missed out on. Tell us what went down there.
Yeah, disappointing that the Sky don't have any of their own players, but fans will get to see some favorites from the past. We've got Kalia Copper, Marina Mabry, Angel Reese, the most recent. And these are all players that the Sky have had and unfortunately let go.
Yeah, they let them go. I guess I'm kind of like, why don't they have them anymore? But they let them go. Maggie, then there is also the Sky's practice facility. Wasn't ready in time for the weekend. And you've written about how that's a missed opportunity for the Sky.
Yeah, I mean, this really could have been an opportunity to show some of the league's best players, hey, look at this gorgeous practice facility we have. Look at all that we have done to grow and change our reputation as not perhaps the best team in the league. And they missed it. And we know, obviously, it's construction in Chicago. We know how that's going to go. But that they made it a promise and that they made it what they were going. They were going to have so many events at the practice facility. And now, I mean, the Obama Center is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited to go there tomorrow. But they are definitely just missing out on some chances.
Yeah. How important is, you know, a good shining, you know, practice facility to the organization, but also to the city?
I mean, it's a huge deal in attracting the best players because the salaries you can only do so much with. I mean, that's changed a little bit with the last CBA, but still, there's only so much you can do with the salaries. But in showing how a player will be treated like a professional, how they'll get to recover well, how they'll get to just have a great place to hang out with their teammates. That's what a lot of the other best teams are offering. So if the Sky want to compete, they have to offer that as well.
Clarissa, how does the growth of the WNBA, how does that sort of change the landscape for players at the college level, even high school?
I mean, wow, just from when I played, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, I played in 97, my city championship game against Marshall High School. I went to Winnie Young, and I played in front of 7,000 people, you know, at that time. The fandom was there. Has it grown? It's grown exponentially. But the difference now, I believe, is like, you know, when I played, I knew I could not make a career out of basketball. So I had to pivot, and I got into hospitality. You know, the younger generation now can look at the game and say, hey, I can make a career out of basketball. I can do that. I can make a profession. My life can be sustained from women's sports. And I think that's the biggest difference.
Right. And we're looking at a few pictures from an event that the Sky did where they were painting some three-point lines, I think, on a basketball court for younger players. Alyssa, for Sky fans, what are some of the bright spots this season to look for?
So, as usual, the Sky actually do have some really great players. Their record does not necessarily reflect that, and I think fans have had to suffer the disappointment of seeing great players walk away. But we do have right now Rekia Jackson, Sydney Taylor, and Camila Cardoso, three very exciting young players that could potentially be a foundation for this team for the future.
Okay, so this isn't the big year for the Sky again.
This will not be a big
like
year.
It sounds like we're doing some team building. Clarissa, what is behind the growing interest in the WNBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think the league is and the Chicago Sky are finally starting to invest in the players, and that's the biggest thing. They're investing in their players. As we know, visibility is equity. So with that, the game is growing, and also we're experiencing a cultural shift in women's sports. And Chicago's at the heart of that. You know, not only is Chicago known as a sports mecca of the world, in my opinion, but now we're going to be known as the women's sports mecca of the world. You know, it's all starting here with WNBA All-Star. We're highlighting the city. And, you know, I had a chat with Nadia Rawlinson, who's one of the co-owners of the Chicago Sky, and I asked her, what's next for you? And what is next is, aside from the practice facility, is building their own stadium. And I believe that that is something that she wants to do, not only for the league, but for the city and for the Chicago Sky.
So one of those investments, Maggie, is, you know, it's another change since 2022, and that's the collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league signed this spring. Tell us about that and what it does.
I mean, the biggest thing is that it allowed for much bigger salaries. The players' salaries, I believe, quadrupled, the highest amount. You have players who are millionaires now, and they could not become millionaires from playing in the WNBA in the past. So, I mean, obviously that's a big change, but also things like investment into teams, players wanted that codified, things like having a massage therapist, having good recovery items, having a nutritionist, all sorts of chiropractor, all kinds of things that make them healthier and better players and able to have longer careers.
Alyssa, the team also has several new teams. How has that growth, you know, changed the league?
I think it's added to the culture. The new teams in San Francisco, Toronto, and Portland, those cities are so excited to have women's basketball. Like, I think it ties to what Clarissa was talking about. Like, there's always been this interest and desire to watch women play, and now you've added three new teams that are just putting an amazing product on the floor and have, like, the support that has always been there from their cities.
All right, Alyssa, what are you going to be watching for this weekend?
This weekend, the point guards, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, Olivia Miles are like the new generation of point guards in this league. I also played basketball as a point guard, so that's what I'm going to be watching.
All right, 10 seconds. What are you watching for, Clarissa?
Oh, man. The three-point contest. We were talking about that before we got on, and I think that's going to be an exciting one. I think we've got a few bets going on as to who's going to win, but definitely a three-point contest.
Maggie.
I'm just kind of excited to see the goofiness and the camaraderie that you could have in an All-Star game that you can't have in a real game. So, you know, former teammates.
That personality.
Yeah, former teammates messing with each other, stud buds.
All right.
You know, that's my favorite part of All-Star games.
All right, looking forward to it. Maggie Hendricks, Alyssa Hirsch, Clarissa Flores. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, professional athletes playing on a different kind of court. Chicago has the Bears, Bulls, Sky, Cubs, Sox, Stars, Fire, and Blackhawks. But did you know? Also, it's home to a professional pickleball team. They're called the Chicago Slice, and they're part of Major League Pickleball, which is hosting a four-day tournament in suburban Northbrook beginning today. Joanna Hernandez stopped by an exhibition match earlier this week in Wrigleyville to learn more.
If you think pickleball is slow, these players are ready to change your mind. It's a sport some say is part ping pong, part tennis, and all skill.
It's really hard, and you can't tell how hard it is until you can see it live and in person. And you see these guys out here playing, they're incredible. Their reflexes, their speed, their athleticism.
It's also one of the few pro sports where men and women compete side by side, battling it out in doubles and mixed double matches.
I've been playing since 2013. Hardly anybody was playing. At that point, it was all old people. Now you've got plenty of younger people coming in. The new generation is loving it. So many more people playing.
That's Zane Navratil, a former world number one in men's singles. He won three Wisconsin State tennis championships in high school, Now he's become one of the most recognizable faces in professional pickleball, and he's on Team Slice.
It's so exciting to see just how many people are fired up about it. I mean, talking about young kids, we got a couple of them on our Major League Pickleball team. Like, they're really changing the way that this game is being played.
One of the Chicago Slice's youngest players is 13-year-old Elsie Hendershot, the Utah native turned pro in 2025.
I started with my family, then I kind of moved on to like junior pro. I started doing really well in those, kind of moving up a level, and then I was able to get signed, and then I got drafted, so now I'm here.
Ahead of the tournament, the Chicago Slice gave people a taste of what they're bringing to the court at Gallagher Way in Wrigleyville.
The goal for us is to win a championship in a couple years.
The four-day tournament brings the Major League Pickleball's top teams to Northbrook, with the Chicago Slice hoping home court advantage gives them an edge.
It's like any other pro sport. We're trading for players, signing them, free agency, waivers, anything you could think of in other sports, we're doing the same thing here.
Chicago is certainly known as a sports town. Now the Chicago Slice are hoping to carve out a place of their own.
When you come and you watch the pros, you can really appreciate how amazing they are.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
And the Chicago Slice play against the Atlanta Bouncers in the first match today. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletters, The Daily Chicagoan and Urban Nature, both at WTTW.com/newsletter. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for The Week in Review. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines. PBS NewsHour. Next on WTTW.
This monument put a new face on the Civil War. This monument propelled us into the modern age. And this monument broke all the rules. Discover the hidden meaning behind the Statue of Liberty. 10 monuments that changed America.
Friday at 8 on WTTW.
This is the beginning of the most audacious undertaking that man has ever attempted.
It was a hard march.
This will be the greatest and most complex exploration in man's history.
Everybody felt they had a piece of it, and they did.
Friday at 9 on WTTW.
I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks to your support, WTTW is able to bring you quality, independent journalism on television and online. We couldn't do it without you, and we want you to know how much we appreciate you. Thank you.
Set off on your next adventure in WTTW's 2026 Be a Winner sweepstakes. Enter for your chance to win a 16-day escorted tour through Kenya and Tanzania from Road Scholar, following annual wildlife migration across the Serengeti Plains. Or you could win the grand prize, a new 2027 Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid, courtesy of McGrath Evanston Subaru. Visit WTTW.com/sweepstakes and enter today.
WTTW programming originates from the Rene Crown Public Media Center. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation is proud to support programming on WTTW.
This financial gain that you receive could be construed as buying and selling babies.
The whole point is to get better lives for the babies.
Hand of mine over this morning. It's gone.
You let them be outbid in your baby auction.
and decided to take back what they believe is rightfully theirs.
Where's the baby?
Cuffy's not breathing.
Tonight at 7 on WTTW.
I think he was dead, yes, before he was tied to this stake.
Do we ever trust him up like that?
Or sending a message?
For whom was that message intended?
I want to know what happened to Philip. Who killed him? What killed him? Why?
Philip left Dahlia's that morning with the ring. Then whoever has that ring now is either the killer or the last person to see Philip alive.
Tonight at 8:30 on WTTW.
Hi, Chicago. I'm Melanie.
I'm Kira.
And you're watching WTTW.
Good evening. I'm Amna Nawaz.
And I'm Jeff Bennett. On the NewsHour tonight, Iran-backed Houthi rebels fire on Saudi vessels in the Red Sea, threatening yet another crucial shipping lane and causing oil prices to spike.
President Trump shies away from pressuring China over his baseless claims of election interference.
And the FDA considers loosening restrictions on peptides, which have gained popularity thanks to online influencers touting their purported health benefits.
By making these things easily accessible without requiring any clinical study, it's going to make it harder still to figure out what they're actually doing inside the body.
Major funding for the PBS NewsHour has been provided by
Consumer Cellular. This is Sam.
How may I help you?
This is a pocket dial. Well, somebody's pocket.
Thought I'd let you know that with Consumer Cellular,
you get nationwide coverage with no contract. That's kind of our thing.
Have a nice day.
Friends of the NewsHour, including Robert S. Kaplan,